This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
I think every 27 years, like clockwork, the Atlanta Braves win a World Series. 1995 is the last one of 27 seasons. 1995 was the last one. Last night, it became the next one. Jorge Soler's Looney Tunes three-run home run in the top of the third was all Atlanta needed.
There they go, and the 3-2 hit high in the air. Deep left field, and it is going to leave the ballpark over the train tracks and into the night. He made one mistake too many, hung a breaking ball right over the middle of the plate, and Jorge Soler destroyed it, and it is 3-0 Atlanta.
I think I saw somebody on Twitter say that we're going to have to come up with a new word for destroying a baseball. Because that ball was crushed.
Yeah,
just
monster.
Absolutely crushed.
It was baseball devastation is what happened.
I mean, he hit the home run. He basically stood in the opposite batter's box after launching it and turned to his dugout and just talked. His own dugout. He didn't turn to the Houston dugout. To his own dugout and just talked. It pounded his chest, and when the camera followed that, I'm like, "Where's the? Oh, the camera's going there."
It was the biggest home run I can remember seeing in a long time.
They only measured it as 466 feet. NASA tracked it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember. I think it was Pujols' home run off of Brad Lidge.
Yep. Back same ballpark in 95.
Back
in 2005. Yeah, same ballpark.
It was like the biggest home run I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, pulverized that baseball. Shouts to Twitter. Really, I think 90% of Twitter made the same joke. I chose not to. I knew it was coming. The solar system.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I was here for it. They were all funny.
You're welcome, Atlanta. You are welcome, Major League Baseball. And I speak on behalf of the Chicago Cubs for sponsoring the excitement in this year's playoffs.
Oh, my gosh. So, last night, somebody asked me, hey, did he play with the Cubs before?
Yeah.
And I said, I need confirmation from Alec, yes. He did not come directly from the Cubs. The Cubs traded him to the Royals a while back, and the Royals traded him to the Braves. So I dropped the Crash Davis.
He was a Cub draft pick.
Oh, of course. That was an amazing class. Kyle Schwarber. Mm-hmm. I think Chris Bryant was part of that. Javi Baez was part of that class coming up. Anyway, I dropped the Crash Davis line, anything that travels that far should have a stewardess on it, on Twitter. And that was too much for that guy, Prison Mike, on Twitter. Too much for him. He unfollow. I'm like, I'm devastated. I'm just devastated. So last straw for Prison Mike. I'm one follower down.
What was the issue with that?
I don't know, but that was it for him. That was the straw.
It's flight attendant.
That was it, right? I was just using the Crash Davis line. So Luis Garcia, the pitcher. Do you see him on that pitch? He never looked back.
Didn't need to.
He didn't. He saw contact and went, nope, I want no part of it. He looked at his own dugout. He just walked away, never turned around, because I wouldn't either. Dansby Swanson's hungry man two-run line shot homer in the fifth made it 5-0. I've been making that joke for 4 days. Since Dansby Swanson hit the home run in game four? I've been made as a hungry man. Get it? Dan Swanson's hungry man? Never mind. Anyway, he had some big hits in the series, too. Freddie Freeman followed a few batters later with an RBI double, added a solo jack in the seventh. 7-0 was the final. Max Fried got off to a bad start. Jose Altuve reached on an infield single, then Michael Brantley hit a chopper towards first. Fried and Freeman misplayed that for an error. I kind of blame both. Freeman could have flipped it to him right away, and he didn't. He waited, and then by that time it was too late. And then Freed's reaching for the base, and he got stepped on. Good thing that Brantley wears plastic or rubber cleats as opposed to metal spikes. Very lucky, because that could have gotten ugly. But I also don't know why they didn't challenge it, because nobody touched first base. And the Braves clearly had a replay of it and decided not to challenge it. Couldn't figure that out. Anyway, it fired Fried up. He retired. He got retired the next three guys. The strikeout of Gurriel, 97, 98 miles an hour at the knees, was just nasty. And he faced one batter over the minimum in completing six innings. And that was a significant thing, because no pitcher had completed six innings. No starting pitcher had completed six innings in the playoffs. Tyler Matzek was great in relief, two innings. What a great story he is. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And then Will Smith closed it out in the ninth. Good for Atlanta. Good for Freddie Freeman. I said before the series that I could be happy for a player on each side. I could be happy for a person on each side. Freddie Freeman and Dusty Baker. And sorry for Dusty Baker, but happy as heck for Freddie Freeman, who absolutely deserves it. All right, let's get to the college football angle. John Manuel is going to join us in a few minutes to talk about the World Series, so we'll get more into that game. What did they tell us yesterday? Say it with me, people. Nothing. They didn't tell us anything yesterday. At least nothing we didn't already know. We know it's hard, nearly impossible. If you want to say actually impossible, I'm not going to argue with you. For a group of five team to make the college football playoff. And maybe they just decided not to lie to you in week one of the playoff reveal. Maybe they simply decided, you know what? We're not going to pull the rug out of Cincinnati fans when the final playoff rankings come out. We're going to tell you straight up that you're not going to be part of it. I would argue that it's not over for Cincinnati. There's still a lot that can happen. We have five more weeks of data points, to use their terms. So if Cincinnati wins out, there's a chance. Not a good one, but there's a chance. And we said after the win over Notre Dame, don't get too crazy. You're still probably not going to be part of the playoff, because they don't want you part of the playoff. I've been telling you this for years. They will actively figure out a way to avoid having Cincinnati in the playoff. But at some point, it might become unavoidable. At which case, Cincinnati, just keep winning. You never know. Anyway, we will decide who got screwed in our next segment. We're going to talk to John Manuel here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about who got screwed by the committee. But here's the thing. I don't think the committee was wrong in their reasoning. I mean, not to use the old trope from the Feinbaum show, but Cincinnati don't play nobody, Paul. Yeah, they have the win over Notre Dame. That's it. That's the season. They have a one-game season. Sorry. Schedule isn't good. I'm not saying it's their fault, but the schedule isn't good. And you don't get credit for the schedule that you make. You get credit for the schedule that you played, and the schedule that they played has one good win on it. That's it. So what are we doing? Why are we complaining? And real quick, for the people complaining about the college football playoff committee screwing Cincinnati, are you also complaining that they screwed Oklahoma and Wake Forest? I'm curious. Because those are comparable schedules. Not maybe not the one win, which clearly the committee favors, and that's why Cincinnati is sixth and Oklahoma is eighth and Wake Forest is ninth. But the schedule itself, the total body of work, which is why Alabama's two over Michigan State. because Alabama's overall schedule is flat better by a ton than Cincinnati. So if you're going to complain that Cincinnati was hosed, I want to hear that same energy about Wake Forest and Oklahoma, also undefeated, also have done everything the committee has asked. So I will point, Chris Fowler on Twitter, ESPN and ABC's college football play-by-play guru, simply asked this question. It made a list, and I don't remember all the teams he used, but it was like Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Cincinnati. I don't think he put Oklahoma in the list. I think it was Oregon, Ohio State, and Alabama, and Cincinnati. Said if your team was going to play in a college football playoff semifinal, which of those teams would you rather face? I mean, maybe that's not the best way of, you know, putting it, but it ain't far off. Cincinnati's schedule just turned out to not be that great. And when you struggle in your last two opportunities to make an impression, when you only beat Navy by 7, and then you're 14-12 up on Tulane, who's got, what, 2 wins this year? When you're 14-12 up late, you know, into the, I think it's either late third or early fourth quarter, like, the committee's watching. So, you have to dominate those games. And if you don't, you're leaving it up to the eye test, which we all love. Not really. I don't love the eye test. But the eye test isn't the worst part of this.
I don't mind the eye test.
I mean, the eye test isn't the worst part about it.
Because the numbers can tell you one thing, and then you can watch a team play and be like, yeah, that team's a lot better than that team, even though their numbers might look better.
Right. And the numbers are entirely dependent upon who you play. Entirely dependent upon who you play.
Like, I mean, I don't necessarily believe in the we are what we're record, what our record says we are.
No, certainly not in college football. Actually, I think in the NFL, too. I don't think I think your record has a lot to do with who you played. I mean, that's just, I just think that's reality. So we'll talk more about this. We'll find out who you think got screwed coming up in a little bit. John Manuel, pro scout, my friend, former editor-in-chief, Baseball America, joins us now on the Adam Gold Show. First of all, is it fair for me, a lifelong Mets fan with no love lost for the Braves, to be happy that Freddie Freeman is a World Series champion?
I think so. He seems like a pretty likable dude. I've followed his career closely ever since my draft write-up for him at Baseball America said, yeah, this guy's a Cal State Fullerton signee, but, you know, he can hit. But I like him better on the mound. And then I just went all about how great of a pitching prospect Freddie Freeman was. So I was wrong about him then. I was wrong about him when I said, well, yeah, he'll be a good hitter, but he's Jason Hayward's wingman. You know, so I was wrong about him for a long time. And he's just become a great player. But their whole lineup, I looked it up. Their infielders, Freeman, Riley, and Swanson, those guys all played 175 or more games. So the Braves' entire infield just said load management. What is that? They finished incredibly strong, and they played pretty much every day, which is really impressive. So they earned that championship.
Well, load management is only for starting pitchers. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I do want to talk about Max Fried.
Yes.
Look, I know it's coincidence, but he didn't look great in terms of his command through two batters. Through two batters. And then that second batter was the Michael Brantley tapper to first. And I think I will blame Freeman as much as I will blame Freed for the mishap at first base. But he got stepped on, fortunately not with metal spikes, so there wasn't real damage done, although I can't imagine it felt good. I mean, he could have broken his ankle or his lower leg very easily. But from that point on, did that fire up Max? What how do you make sense of that?
I thought adrenaline is a hell of a drug. That's what I thought. Well, you're showing 97, 98 all of a sudden. So when he blew away Gurriel,
yeah,
and Carlos Correa, he was clearly, I think, the mix of adrenaline and fear really drove Max Fried in that moment. And I think what you really saw was just his athleticism combined with that adrenaline and fear. He's such an athlete. Again, his draft write-up was all about how he would have been a prospect as a center fielder if he weren't such a good pitcher. And, you know, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't drive this point home in the postseason. But the fact that he and Lucas Giolito and Jack Flaherty, three major league front of the rotation starters, were all teammates on the 2012 Harvard-Westlake team. I mean, that's just the most incredible high school assemblage of talent I could ever remember in all the time I've been doing this. And the Braves prove one of my pet theorems, which is you cannot win a championship without top-of-the-draft arms. And the Braves had four pitchers who were drafted with top 10 picks who were major contributors in the World Series. You had Freed with a single-digit pick of the Padres in 2012, acquired for Justin Upton. Great trade there, A.J. Preller. I just signed my Twins contract, so I'm not looking for a job with the Padres. Ian Anderson was the third overall pick in 2016 by the Braves. Tyler Matzek was the ninth overall pick back in 2009 by the Rockies. And Kyle Wright, low-key, the hero, really saved the Braves, I think, in game three with the 4 2/3 innings. And he was the fourth or fifth overall pick in 2017, and the Braves have been waiting for him. That's a Vanderbilt pitcher picking the top five picks. Usually those guys rush to the major leagues, like a Walker Buehler or some of those guys, and it took Kyle Wright a while, and the Braves had to really rebuild him from scratch kind of this year, but kudos to them because he was really, really effective in that game and gave the Braves a third starter that they really needed after Charlie Morton got hurt.
Yeah, Charlie Morton's injury certainly impacted Atlanta in this series. I want to go back to Tyler Matzek real quick because Jorge Soler was named the playoff, the World Series MVP, and I think that's the right call. You hit three go-ahead home runs in a four-game span, actually less than that because it was game one, game four, and game six. You hit three go-ahead home runs, and that's that. We're done. We don't have to have the conversation. But Tyler Matzek not only was lights out in the playoffs, I mean, he was ridiculous in the playoffs, all three rounds of the playoffs, but the story of Tyler Matzek, so yeah, he was a top 10 pick back in 2009, but, you know, he's been a pro now for, this is his 12th pro season. One of those years was spent in independent ball, and the fact that he has come back, and that was just a couple of years ago, he's come back with the Braves the last 2 years to be, I mean, just an incredibly important lefty piece out of the bullpen. I mean, he was playing double A at like age 28. How many 28-year-olds are there at double A?
He's been through so much, Adam. You have to love it to do it like his, the way he's done it. I wrote about Matzek in 2011. He was at Asheville in the Rockies organization, and one of the people who works for the tourists called the Baseball America office and said, hey, Tyler Matzek went home. You should follow up on that. And he did. He and the Rockies worked. He was so frustrated with the Rockies that he went home to work with his personal pitching coach. And he was basically, in high school, he was a Mike Marshall disciple, the former Cy Young Award winner, the late right-handed pitching Mike Marshall. Not the Dodgers' crappy outfielder, Mike Marshall, but the Dodgers' good reliever, Mike Marshall.
Yeah, won the Cy Young in, like, 74.
Right. But Mike Marshall had some crazy, he had some very different ideas on pitching mechanics and development. And Tyler Matzek did a lot of Mike Marshall stuff. And, this was when pitching was really just starting to kind of get broken down as a science the way it's taught now. And I think the Rockies did not know how to develop Tyler Matzek, and Tyler Matzek didn't know. He knew what he was doing, but I don't think he knew why he was doing it. And he got to the major leagues with the Rockies after going home, but then he lost it again. So his road has been so different from everyone else's. I don't know the guy personally, but just he pitched in 13 of 16 games for them. Freed was dynamic last night for six innings. I don't think anybody complained when they brought Matzek in for two. There was no gnashing of teeth like there was for Ian Anderson. I would have loved for Freed to have thrown a complete game. That would have been a great story. But I totally understand why Snitker went to Matzek. And the fact that Matzek and Minter and Will Smith, three power lefty relievers, were so good for the Braves. And Smith, after being shaky all year, his slider was just phenomenal in the whole postseason. But just those three lefty relievers were awesome. And then Luke Jackson was terrible in the LCS, and he was really good in the World Series. So the Braves bullpen, I don't think Snicker ever wavered about, you know, hitting those four guys in the postseason and asking them to come out and get out, and they did it consistently. So Matzik's the best story, but the whole unit was pretty outstanding.
Oh, there's no question. They did great work in the bullpen. The only thing, I just questioned what happened with Tucker Davidson in Game 5.
Yeah.
That was a game that I think that they treated more like an August game than an October game, but that's just me. Never wanted to get on a plane.
Guys.
Right. Never wanted to get on a plane, but ultimately it didn't stop the Braves from winning a World Series. Let me ask you this question, John Manuel. We don't have much more time left, but I kept hearing that the Astros are going to lose Carlos Correa. He's going to get big money in a free agent deal. I've heard possibly from Detroit. I've heard possibly from the Yankees. I don't really care. My curiosity is, you're the Houston Astros. Why do you have to lose Carlos Correa?
I'm curious about that, too. They obviously have a ready-made shortstop. I mean, Alex Bregman was drafted as a shortstop. I think a lot of people believe he would be very capable if you slid him over to shortstop.
Okay.
However, he sure didn't look like the old Alex Bregman.
No.
And, you know, 2019 was the year of the home run and the juiced ball. My employers, my organization, the Twins, set the all-time record with 307 home runs. You know, that's the year that Gurriel hit 30-some home runs. And Bregman hit 40-something. And since then, he's been pretty ordinary. He's been good, but not great. Correa showed it defensively the whole postseason. I can't really comment on, like, where I think he'll sign. Because
right.
He's a free agent, and we need a shortstop, too, in Minnesota. Come on down and give us a look, Carlos. But he would be a hard player to replace. We'll just say it that way. There are a lot of good shortstop free agents this year. Most of the consensus seems to be it's either him or Corey Seager who's the best one.
Right.
I can't say my evaluation, but he looked outstanding defensively in the postseason. It's very hard to find a guy with that kind of arm and that kind of power. They just don't make a lot of them, and he's young as well. I mean, he was 17 in 2012
right.
when he was drafted. So he's, 26 hitting the free agent
mm-hmm.
market? That's usually a method for making a lot of money.
All right, John Manuel, final thing. John Smoltz was on this during the game last night, and this is more of a conceptual question for you. Should we be worried that, or is it just circumstance with these two teams having lost Lance McCullers and Charlie Morton, Houston and Atlanta respectively, and Atlanta also didn't have Mike Soroka? Is it just circumstance, or is it a serious problem that nobody pitches innings anymore? Nobody uses really starters anymore. They do a lot of openers. We use bullpen guys. Only 39 pitchers in all of Major League Baseball qualified for the ERA
yeah.
this year. That's 1.3 per team.
Yeah, that's that trend is troublesome. I do think that coming off a 60-game season is the biggest factor. So I do think 2021 is part of, there's a trend that goes back before the pandemic that number was dwindling already.
Yes.
But it was definitely exacerbated by the pandemic
okay.
season and the 60-game season. So I think I'll reserve judgment on the bigger trend. I don't think John Smoltz mentioned the pandemic season
no.
as a big factor enough when he mentioned that trend. But certainly the days of, you know, my son and I just watched the YouTube video yesterday of Jack Morris versus, you know, the 1991
mm-hmm.
World Series. And I think Smoltz went 7 2/3 and what's his name went 9 innings, 10 innings. Jack Morris went
yep.
10 innings to win the Twins last World Series. We're never going to see that again. I just think that's for sure. We're never going to see those guys go to their manager and say no. And why, if Max Fried went to Brian Snicker last night and said, no, I got the ball for the seventh, Snicker's going to be, no, you didn't. You will not, because Tyler Matzik is better than you. And that's how the game has changed, is that those middle relievers now are just better than they used to be. And that's a bigger picture discussion, but
yeah,
that's the real difference. So I do think that trend will continue, but I think 2021 was the worst case scenario coming off the 60-game season last year.
Yeah, I think it was 5 years ago, there were like 59 or 60 pitchers qualified, which is basically two per team, and we're down closer to one. John Manuel,
you're going to see a lot more six-man rotations. Milwaukee did it this year very successfully, and you're going to see that spreads out the innings even more. So I think that trend will continue.
Spreads out the innings, diminishes the salaries, all of that.
Yes,
those
it does.
Two things could be important.
You nailed it.
All right, John Manuel, thank you very much. You're my friend. I appreciate your time. We'll talk soon.
I miss you, Adam. Good talking to
you.
You
got it. Same here, John. The one and only Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast, is with us. Oh, what an appropriate time to talk to you, although it's always an appropriate time to talk to you, Chip. Who got hosed yesterday? Did anybody get hosed?
Anybody who is too upset. I am more than willing to play ringleader. I am more than willing to engage in the conversation because college football is a sport that has been built for long before the college football playoff on debating who is better than who. But I'll say this for like the whole process, because it's easy to be cynical and it's easy to make jokes. But last year it felt really dark, especially with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten starting late.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, arguments that the entire season as a whole was a cash grab or not without merit. But having everyone start at the same time has actually rejuvenated me when it comes to reacting to this this whole process. And I'm sure we'll get into it. But I actually wanted to make sure, even before the rankings release started, and I didn't watch much of the show, but I at least wanted to have my notes together and treat this with some amount of respect, because otherwise it's a disservice to the fans of, I mean, like the fans of teams like a Wake Forest, of a team like BYU, of a team, like a Penn State, who's probably furious that it's not in the top 25 while Wisconsin is.
Like, that was surprising.
I wanted to be able to have some answers for some of those fans that was beyond just, I don't know, it's crooked, forget about it. Because that ultimately for my job falls short of what I could do for fans.
I couldn't figure out. Penn State lost three games in a row. I guess that's it. Maybe the committee was mad. Like, maybe Gary Barta was like, how'd you guys lose to us?
Like this, it was just like deep personal. I don't know. You guys don't look good right now. No way. I don't think so.
Maybe that's his way of really throwing it at Kirk Ferentz. I'm like, come on, man. They're not even ranked. Why were you guys down? Why did you have to come from behind? Anyway, I understand. We knew this was going to happen. Personally, I thought, and I would have put Cincinnati in my top four. I would have put Cincinnati at least at number four. But it just doesn't matter. I mean, this ranking doesn't really matter. And the first four rankings don't matter. Only the last one. I mean, it's just an exercise in futility. I've always thought that they shouldn't even do this show. It does create conversation. I get it. But it creates more problems for the committee and more suspicion for the committee than any benefit they really get, or maybe they just don't care. I know people that don't care about bad publicity. Just spell my name right. And maybe that's the way the committee approaches it.
The committee has seven new members, and I don't think those new members are mailing it in. I think that with it being their first time, and that's nearly half of the 13-person body that makes up the selection committee, it makes it impossible to be able to judge from year to year any kind of consistency, because seven is a lot, but we almost always turn over at least three members of this group. And it was also pointed out to me that everyone is super busy. I mean, these are athletic directors.
Sure.
These are people who, with their actual jobs and very tense actual jobs with a lot of pressure on them, not all of them, but they ultimately are going to come down on a very, very easy formula just to make their own process easy. I think that this is the easy formula. It is quality wins, it is your strength of schedule rating, and it is mostly like head-to-head results. Losses do not matter as much,
right?
And that can be made obvious by Mississippi State being up where it is ranked, because Mississippi State has good wins with Texas A&M, Kentucky, and NC State. LSU and Memphis are bad losses, but it is not penalized for those because it has Texas A&M, Kentucky, than NC State on the resume. So if you go through it and you really like the way that I prepared for the show is I went through about 30 teams and I ranked the wins. And I wrote them the way that I would do it. And I'm sure that's not exactly how the committee does it. But doing that was pretty instructive. When you lay it out, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Florida, Tennessee, Miami, Alabama's got a pretty good resume. And when you lay it out, Notre Dame, Indiana, UCF, Tulane, Navy, Cincinnati doesn't have a very good resume. Oklahoma doesn't have a good resume.
Right.
Texas, West Virginia, Kansas State, Nebraska, TCU, Texas Tech, Kansas. I'll tell you what. That's bad news for the future of the Big 12 because Oklahoma got treated like a group of five team with an undefeated record and right. being ranked outside the top five.
Yeah, and Wake Forest got treated like an undefeated ACC team in a year where the three teams that we thought would be good before the season started all aren't good enough, and they're not in the rankings. So
and you know what Gary Barta said? He said there was a ton of discussion about Oklahoma against Wake Forest.
I know.
So first of all, congratulations, Wake Forest. Like you and Oklahoma was one of the biggest debates, and what it came down to was Texas over Virginia because Wake Forest's right. best win is Virginia.
Yes, it is. And look, Wake Forest, their schedule's backloaded. You get a chance to go, and the problem is going to be that at the end of this season, even if Wake Forest goes undefeated, they go 13-0. At best, they'll have two wins over teams that won nine games. You know, maybe NC State will win nine games. Clemson won't. Maybe NC State will win nine games. Maybe Pittsburgh or Virginia, depending on who Wake Forest would beat in the ACC title game. I'm telling you, man, a Wake Pitt ACC title game would draw. Countless dozens of eyeballs to
well,
TV.
Well, listen, I really don't want to. You do a great job of preparing for the show. I've always admired it. I've taken notes on it, but I don't want to hijack this. But I want it only because it would be hilarious to try to explain to the rest of the nation why Wake Forest losing to North Carolina does not impact its ACC championship hopes. Why two schools that were original founding members of this league and are located just a few hours apart down the interstate, why this result has nothing to do with what happens in the ACC championship race.
Yeah, what did Dave Clawson tell me the other day? That Wake and Carolina played the first college football game in the state of North Carolina. Like, that was the game. It was Wake versus UNC. This is not a conference game. But look, that's an issue that I'm going to bring up. And it might as well just kind of outlay my point here. It speaks to how silly the Atlantic Coast Conference's scheduling model is. And it's because of divisions, not because of anything else. It's because of divisions that we have this meeting scheduled as a conference game once every 6 years. Same with Duke and NC State. The fact that that is a game every 6 years that you could enter NC State, even in a time of a pandemic, and not play a game or dress for a game against Duke in your time at State is mind-blowing to me. If we got rid of divisions, at basically every other year, State and Duke would play, Carolina and Wake would play, and we don't need that game every season, but we certainly need it. It needs to be played more than once every 6 years, and it's all about divisions, and this could be easily rectified. Last year was fun. We had the two best teams in the ACC meet for the conference championship game. It didn't matter that they had met already once that year. They just worked out that way. We could do that again. Nobody'd get hurt. We'd have the two best teams in the leagues. So,
if you believe in the alliance, I think the Pac-12 will be first, and if you're, you know— if y'all are as tight as you say you are in the alliance, then just let it bleed on over. I mean, I'll tell you what, like the Big Ten East, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, they would sign up for divisionless football in a heartbeat.
We should do
it. I think the same could be said for a lot of the leadership in the ACC as well. But again, based on my reading of the tea leaves, I do expect the Pac-12 to ditch divisions, and I think it could happen pretty soon.
Good. Divisions are bad. They're false. Like, it's almost routine. Again, you alluded to it. The Big Ten East, I don't know if those were legends or leaders back in the day, but the Big Ten East, four of the teams are better than the best team in the Big Ten West.
At least three. Leaders, legends and leaders were even split up. Like it wasn't even with the East and the West.
Oh, it wasn't?
Because Michigan and Michigan State were legends, and Ohio State and Penn State were leaders. Wisconsin was a leader. Iowa was a legend.
I don't even understand. That's fine. Okay. All right. So here's what I think the committee said. And I think the committee, if this is what they mean, then I am 100% on board with it. I think they said that your entire schedule matters, not just the one game. No offense to Cincinnati. You've played so far a one-game schedule. I think they said that your entire schedule matters. Or maybe that didn't matter if you're Oregon, but you do have, I think, the best win in college football, which is Oregon's win at Ohio State. So maybe that's what they said, that we value all the games you play, not just a couple of the games you play.
Without a doubt. And I think it's, again, these are busy people. They need someone to spit out a stupid number that they can look at and compare to the other stupid numbers. And that is a strength of schedule rating that is based on everybody that you have played to this point. So strength of schedule or strength of all of your games, who you play matters, but not necessarily who you have played, which brings us back to the Oklahoma scenario where with Oklahoma State and Baylor left on the schedule, and also for Oklahoma State and Baylor, you know, also having Oklahoma left on the schedule, the Sooners are being hurt because to this point, they've played a very weak schedule. But that is why the Sooners are a team with incredible upward mobility in these rankings, because the toughest games are left on the schedule. Right. I could argue that Ohio State at 5, you know, still having both Michigan State and Michigan left on the schedule. The strength of schedule is already good because you played Oregon, but lost to them, but still played Oregon. I think that that's another one where the reason why people find it easy to see the Buckeyes taking a big jump forward is because the schedule only gets more difficult, which provides more opportunities to jump up in the rankings.
Yeah, the only team I think that doesn't really control, well, there are two undefeated teams that don't control their own destiny to me are Cincinnati and Wake Forest. They're both at the mercy of everybody else. But I think to an extent, if Oklahoma finishes 13-0, I have a hard time believing that Oklahoma is not going to be one of the four. Regardless Correct. Of how average they've been, the schedule has been backloaded for them. Ohio State clearly has it all in front of them. Alabama may have to beat Georgia. I can see a scenario where they don't have to beat Georgia, where if that game...
Please, no.
If that game's 23-21, you know, or something like that, if that's a tight game, I could see the committee... It depends on what else happens, but I could see the committee going, we think those are the two best teams in college football. So I could see them putting Alabama at 4, making them play a semifinal game, maybe, but I could see them both being in the playoff. But I think Alabama at that point would need a lot of other help to do it. They would need basically no other alternatives for, and I think if 13-0 Cincinnati versus 11-2 Alabama, I think Alabama's going to go.
You're right.
And I think the same thing about 13-0 Wake Forest, that I think 11-2 Alabama would get that spot. And I'm not going to cry.
And that's only if the two is Georgia. I don't think an Iron Bowl win bounces Bama. I mean, Iron Bowl loss bounces Bama.
No, they can't lose another
regular
game.
Season.
The only team they can lose to is Georgia. Yes,
correct.
There's no question. And they can't lose comfortably. That game has to look like the two best teams in college football for Alabama to get no demerits for losing that game. So give me a scenario before we break. That Cincinnati is not out of it. I know they're sixth. I don't care about the ranking today. I don't think that in and of itself is significant. But what has to happen for Cincinnati to have, can rub rosary beads prior to the final committee rankings the Sunday after the conference championship games? What has to happen?
Oregon needs to have 2 or 3 losses. And I would look at the Pac-12 championship game as another opportunity where they could trip up along the way. And Oklahoma needs to lose in the conference championship game and maybe also before then. But I think the conference championship Oklahoma Sooners, even with one loss, might get in ahead of Cincinnati. So you need Oklahoma to lose in the Big 12 title game and Oregon to take another loss. And then, and also Ohio State to work through the rest of the Big 10, handing out losses left and right. So you finish with a scenario where you could have a Georgia, you could have an Ohio State, you could have
an Alabama.
You could have an Alabama also in there as well, and then a Cincinnati. So the Cincinnati, to me, I've said, if you're a Cincinnati fan, you're rooting against Oregon and you're rooting against Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And that's very possible.
Oregon, and that's okay. It's college football. Yeah, they might lose.
Oregon could lose at Utah and then lose to Utah again.
Do you think that I have no idea what to make of Oregon-Washington, but historically that game has been great. I think Washington has no offense. I don't know how they end up pulling off that upset, but that's a 7-point spread.
Yeah.
I mean, there are four or five top 20 teams that are in tricky positions just starting this week. So all of our play it out, we go, okay, so you run the table, you run the table, you run the table, you run the table. And decades of college football have shown us that that simply never plays out as cleanly or as easily as we expect.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.